everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about today.
My background is very different from JD's.
That is something you don't see every day. Who is that? I'm going to tell you. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. So let's get started. I watched something last night I thought was really, really cool. You know, political conventions, they don't usually offer up any news, or for that matter, anybody that's different, you know? Same old, a lot of choreographed stuff. That is not the case with what I'm about to show you. Here now is somebody new, somebody different, somebody who can hopefully offer up some fresh ideas, and God, we need them. This is the woman who could very well soon become the second lady of the United States, the wife of J.D. Vance, Usha Vance. Here she is.
My background is very different from J.D.'s. I grew up in San Diego in a middle-class community. With two loving parents, both immigrants from India, and a wonderful sister. That JD and I could meet at all, let alone fall in love and marry, is a testament to this great country. When JD met me, he approached our differences with curiosity and enthusiasm. He wanted to know everything about me, where I came from, what my life had been like. Although he's a meat and potatoes kind of guy, he adapted to my vegetarian diet and learned to cook food from my mother, Indian food. Before I knew it, he had become an integral part of my family, a person I could not imagine living without.
See, good for her. Good for her family, the Chilakuris, and for the immensely successful and family-oriented Indian-American communities that are in the United States today and who are our friends and our colleagues, right? And in many ways, on a personal note, I'm an immigrant. My parents brought me to this country because they felt it would be good for me and for my brothers at the time. And I relate to the story of hardworking people who've come to this country, tell the stories of their moms and dads and how hard they worked and sacrificed to bring them to this country. And I was so, I was happy to see that last night as an immigrant watching the GOP convention. Not something you would have seen so much of in the past, but you're seeing it now. Good for her, good for them, good for the GOP. I don't know. Manila, what do you think?
Yeah, same, Rick. I am the child of immigrants, the first American born in my family. I could relate. So here's this new face, right, of the GOP, Usha, along with Vivek Ramaswamy, both South Asian kids born to immigrant parents from India. See, unlike Nikki Haley before them, these two have actually put their ethnicity front and center, which is unusual for the Republican Party, who usually try to skirt around someone's ethnicity, you know, putting party and country at the fore. That's sort of an unspoken truism, I think, in the GOP. They don't want to make identity politics a topic, which is fair, but to ignore it is foolish. Here, diversity can work in their favor as a strength in their party to show that the new guard welcomes newcomers that better reflect America's diversity. And Usha Vance, I mean, here she is, this polished Ivy League Californian, accomplished woman in her own right. You know, she's an attorney. At one point, she was a clerk at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know, love JD and Usha or not, one thing is for sure, Rick. They are young, they're a millennial couple, an interracial marriage, they have mixed kids, and they will have an impact on American politics going forward.
We have a word for that in our culture. I'm Hispanic, obviously, and we call it preparados, which means they come to the world and they offer up stuff because they're prepared. I guess in English we would call that educated people. She's educated, so is he. Good to see. Meanwhile, in the politics as usual segment, the president of the United States stumbled and mumbled once again. I hate having to say this all the time. This time, President Biden was speaking at the most historically important group of African Americans in the United States, the NAACP. And here is what he said.
Corporate profits are double since the pandemic. And they keep bringing prices down. We have to bring prices down further. Look, folks, the idea that corporate-owned housing is able to raise your rent $300-$400 a month or something, under what I'm about to announce, they can't raise it more than $55.
Oops. He didn't. You notice how he looked in the teleprompter to see if he, what does it say? Does that? It's a good policy. The teleprompter said 5%, and somehow he got from 5% $55. I don't know how he did that, which makes absolutely no sense because the rents are different, so you can't give it a $55. By the way, the initiative to try and control rent increases is important. It is a good idea, Manila. Housing right now is a huge problem in the United States, and it's in large measure being caused by private equity companies who are buying up everything they possibly can, and they're screwing people over by doubling the rent, monopolizing entire areas and apartment buildings, providing horrible maintenance to boot. 5% limit is not a bad idea, or whatever the percentage is, but apparently the president doesn't even know his own policy. I don't know. Here, let's just go on, because there's not much you can say. I mean, how many times? So last night, Adam Schiff came out, I know, from California, and he said publicly, give me a shot of Manila, let me see if she's smiling. Are you mad at me? I'm making fun of you. So Adam Schiff comes out last night, your buddy from California. He says he's done with President Biden, wants him out. So what used to be a whisper campaign among Democrats is now a screaming match, so loud and so forceful, they may have finally gotten to him. Watch what happened, Manila, last night, which what is making a lot of people think it's over. Watch.
We were inside this massive ballroom with several guests who are waiting to hear from President Biden, and he was running late, which is not unusual because he had other events. He had an interview scheduled right before this, and so we thought he was just running a little bit behind. But then the CEO of Unidos USA, the organization that was throwing this event, made the stunning announcement on the stage, telling guests that President Biden was deeply sorry, but he was not going to make it tonight because he had just tested positive for COVID. He wanted to focus on his health and, of course, did not want to get anybody sick.
So all of a sudden, the president has COVID. Questions to you, Manila. Ready? Does he really have COVID? Or is that just going to be his reason for stepping down, since he recently said the only reason that he would step down is if he has some kind of medical condition? Well, that's a medical condition. And if he is stepping down, why is the DNC then moving up and making it a virtual roll call and nomination of the president, as you first reported yesterday right here on this show? What is going on, my dear colleague? Yeah, she... But she has her own way of pronouncing things, I guess. You know, I don't know. I think it is Unidos, which means united, and I think that's what she meant to say. But either way, the fact that all of a sudden at the last minute the president says, oh, I'm out, I have COVID. Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking, yeah, me too. Yeah. Why? But why? He's getting killed. But well, even if you were to run someone else, and that whoever that someone else is, I know you keep throwing out that name, George Clooney, but that's because you think he's almost as handsome as I am. My wife said the same thing this morning, by the way. She agrees with you. But even if they were to put Mickey Mouse out there, given the numbers that I saw last night, 14 states that he won, he's now losing. If you go by just the numbers that we see right now, Manila, there is no way in God's green earth that Joe Biden could beat Donald Trump. It's over, essentially, numerically. So why wouldn't you put anybody else? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I had a conversation with some folks this morning who are somewhat in the know, who said in 2 or 3 days he will announce that he's out, and that's the reason for the COVID thing. You disagree? Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Manila. I'm have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy yourself, and you're my pal. So thank you. And let me know whenever you want to do another commercial for the state of California, and I'll brag about Florida. Florida and California. So here's what's going on. Something interesting just happened between Ukraine and Belarus. Now, it's quite the opposite of what the Western media has been telling us what's going on between Ukraine and Belarus. And when I come back, I'm going to take that story to a former Pentagon official, Michael Maloof. You're going to see his smiling face right about now, right there. There he is, by golly. Michael, this is fascinating. And it's funny how when this happened, we got a lot of information from the media, and now crickets, absolutely nothing. We're going to talk about that. You stay right there. We'll be right back. So I want to bring you up to date on this story because I found this, and welcome back, by the way. I found this next story very, very curious because it's one of those where we hear something that isn't true, and then when it's corrected or it changes, we're expecting to hear a follow-up from the media, but we don't hear a follow-up from the media. So here's what it is. For more than a year now, the State Department, President Biden, and the media have been warning us that this war in Ukraine was going to be escalating. Of course, there was really no proof of that. It was pretty more of a border skirmish at the time. So when there were tensions between Belarus, which is on the other side of Ukraine, and Ukraine itself, they made a huge deal out of it. You know, troops were moving into the area. Oh, my God. The fighting is going to soon be in Belarus. Then it's going to move into Poland. Pretty soon all of Europe is going to be conflagrated and et cetera, right? Well, not only did that not happen, but there's now this report that actually shows that whatever troops were there near the borders of Ukraine and Belarus, right there in that western side of Ukraine, they're gone. Here's the story. It says pretty much that Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko is now saying, yeah, we had some troops deployed there during tensions, but those troops are gone. We've pulled them out. They're no longer there. We got nothing there. By the way, the Ukrainian troops are also not there. So let me bring in my guest now, Michael Maloof, who's a former Pentagon correspondent. So they're not there, and of course the media, Michael, is now coming out and correcting the story and saying that what they had reported before wasn't really true, right? Wrong. If it weren't for us and a few others out there who are reporting this story, everybody would still think it's the status quo. Threats that this thing is going into Europe, that there's going to be expansionism on the part of Russia and its military, And now the Belarusian president is in cahoots with Mr. Putin, et cetera, et cetera. It's wrong, and it's frustrating that they would say that and that they wouldn't correct it now that the new information is out there. What do you say?
Well, they always want to cast a bad light on the Russian side, and there is no evidence that Moscow intends to go into Europe. That's been made very, very clear over and over again by Mr. Putin. And frankly, we see no indications and warnings that is actually occurring. What we see, however, are the expansionist ambitions by NATO forces, wanting to NATO-wise, if I could use that word, both Ukraine and Georgia. And Russian troops are in Belarus. There's no question about that. They have nuclear capabilities now in Belarus. Frankly, Ukraine can no longer guard the entire border and then try to defend its positions all along up and down Donbass and Luhansk regions. Mm. They don't have the troops. They don't have the firepower. And now the Russians, I think, are planning to move in to certain areas now and solidify the Russian-speaking areas at the request, by the way, of Russian speakers in Luhansk and Donbass. And the Russians cannot keep up with it. And the Ukrainians cannot keep up with it.
My reading, and this is as of last night when I was trying to, and it's hard because none of the maps are ever correct, and some of that is understandable because this thing is an ongoing thing. But and also because most of the maps are put together by Western agencies. But even the Western agencies and the think tanks that put these maps together are now showing what even Zelensky seems to be intimating at this time, and that is that the gig is all but up for him. He's out of troops. He's about to be out of ammunition. And even the Patriot missiles that they have sent him are soon to be gone as well because they're being picked off by Russian air defenses and Russian fighter jets, I should say, not to mention drones. So where do you see this thing going, and how? And do you think, as is being suggested, Michael, this thing might be over pretty soon?
It's been over, frankly. Zelensky just refuses to accept that. He's ready to fire his most recent general, and consequently, because he feels that even that general has basically said, his commanding general has said, the gig's up. And and so did his predecessor, who was summarily fired and then became the ambassador to the UK. But it's clear now that Ukraine does not have that capability. Even though it's Zelensky who seems to be holding on, and the only authority that seems to exist in that country now, because there is martial law, is their parliament, their Rada, as they call it. And even there, the head of the Rada is a Zelensky clone. And that person could sue or could actually enter into negotiations with the Russians, but won't because of Zelensky.
Speaking of that, there's a word out today that President Zelensky is now backtracking and is saying he would be willing to sit down and start discussions with a Russian delegation insofar as President Putin is not part of that delegation. What do you make of that?
Well, they had that 2 years ago with in Istanbul. They had an agreement. They had initialed an agreement until Boris Johnson came in and said, don't do it. The question is, why is Boris Johnson, and outside interference from the United States as well, dictating to the Ukrainians? And as a consequence, it's gotten tens of thousands of more Ukrainians killed.
Yeah, but there's a difference. But hold on. There's a difference, Michael. You're right. And what you're stating is absolutely true. And I think the whole world knows it. And we've reported it on several occasions. But I think that situation 2 years ago was one where at least the Western media was reporting that Ukraine had the military advantage at the time. I think now it's pretty obvious, even in Western media, that Ukraine does not have the military advantage. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So him going to the table now, I would argue, maybe you think I'm wrong. It's very different in terms of the environment from him going to the table 2 years ago.
Well, he's now talking about wanting to sit down and talk. That is new. But what he hasn't relinquished are his requirements for sitting down and talking, and that is that Russia gives up all of its territory that it took over, including Crimea, and that Putin be put up for on trial. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the terms are just ridiculous. That's why Russians are saying, look, the Russians will not attend the next Zelensky peace conference simply because it's all rigged. The whole recent Swiss peace conference, in which Russians were not invited, was a hoax. It was a joke.
How much do you think, because it seems to me, you don't seem to think so, but I do. I think we're seeing a different Zelensky right now. I think we're seeing a Zelensky who's in a little bit of a panic mode. I think he's riddled with anxiety about what's going on. And I also think that he's starting to see the tea leaves in terms of Biden's horrible, horrible credibility niche that he's going through right now, as well as the very, very good possibility that Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States. And he's putting all that together, and I think he's wondering what he can do to get the best out of a bad situation.
He's going to have to sit down and negotiate. Otherwise, Russia could enhance its own offensive and consolidate everything. Even J.D. Vance is totally anti-Ukraine funding further.
Yeah.
So let's
take this picture and put the color on it, as you will, as it were. I'm thinking if we were to continue down this enthymeme, Trump gets into the presidency, Zelensky has to come to the table. He says we need a truce. What does that truce look like? I mean, does Russia just maybe go to, what do they not have now? They don't have Odessa. Do they go to Odessa and then say, okay, we're good, you can have the rest? Do you think that's what this situation will end up like?
Zelensky has been promised about a dozen more Patriot units under Biden, under the Biden administration. Remember, we got about another 5 months, 6 months left. And he will probably hold out to the very end. And in that meantime, I think the Russians will consolidate, and they will ultimately take back Kharkov and ultimately Odessa.
They are Russian-speaking
areas.
Yeah. What good does it do you to have Patriot missiles if you don't have people who know how to use them or fire them?
Well, has that stopped them from getting them before? It's just more targets.
Yeah, and I guess if you're a military contractor in the United States, good. That now you know you destroy that one, we can make more.
Money.
Yeah,
sure, of course. But it's a sad case, but it's ultimately a useless expenditure of taxpayers' money.
You worked at the Pentagon. We got 30 seconds left. Who are the people who make these decisions, and why do they make them? What's behind this kind of ridiculous policy making? Is it just really money? And they're Pentagon officials. Why would they do that? They don't make more money.
Pentagon's not in control. In this administration, the Pentagon's not in control. When I was there, Darren Rumsfeld, he was very much in control. It's the National Security Advisor.
Apparatus, yeah.
And also the Secretary of State. They are the ones. These are the ultimate neocons that are pushing the Ukraine narrative, and it's going to fall flat on its face.
It certainly looks that way. And you know what? It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Michael. Thanks so much. I hope you and the family and everything is good. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Good to see you. That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. We like to think that truths don't live in boxes, and that's why we use that as our mission. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here next time.